J1, number 3A.
Now, one of the arguments that comes up concerning the study of science, and especially concerning the question of cultivating a higher scientific understanding of reality, is that it's too intellectual. Now, we see that the mortal, religious, sentimental mentality does not want to have anything to do with study. And therefore, it really tries to fight the demand of science, which is to study and to cultivate a higher scientific understanding of God. Therefore, the lazy, mortal, religious, sentimental mind will say that science is too intellectual. Mrs. Eddy writes of Christian Science that its medicine is intellectual and spiritual. Intellectual, defined by Webster, has a very nice definition. Now, this definition I'd like to read to you in its entirety. One, it means belonging to the intellect or understanding. Two, apprehensible by the intellect alone, hence of a spiritual nature, perceptible only to inspired vision or by spiritual insight. Three, having the power of understanding, having the capacity for the higher forms of knowledge or thought. Four, suitable for the exercise of intellect, demanding study and thought. That is the definition for the word intellectual from Webster. Now, Mary Baker Eddy, in talking about intellectual, the word intellectual, also says in Science and Health that Christian Science does not need intellectual proficiency. Now, Webster defines the proficient as an expert. So when Mary Baker Eddy states that no intellectual proficiency is requisite in the learner, this merely means that the learner of this science does not need to be an intellectual expert. This means that the learner of this science need not to be an intellectual or need not be scholarly or high in the world as far as scholastic attainment goes. So we can see that this word intellectual in the world has two meanings. It has a human meaning and it has a divine connotation. The word intellectual may be used then in the human sense to emphasize merely human thinking. In the divine sense, the word intellectual may be used in a spiritual way, and this is part of Webster's definition when he says in a spiritual tone that of intellectual, he says that it means apprehensible by the intellect alone, hence of a spiritual nature, perceptible only to the inspired vision or by in spiritual insight, having the power of understanding, having the capacity for higher forms of knowledge and thought. Therefore, in divine science, the term intellectual is used in the meaning of having the power of spiritual understanding. Now, we can see, therefore, that one must have the power of spiritual understanding. Therefore, one need not worry about being too intellectual, because one can never have too much spiritual understanding. And also, it's also important to see that the learner need not to have intellectual proficiency, in the sense that the learner need not be knowledgeable in the human system of reference. Why? When in science we ask to absolutely come out of that human system of reference and to contemplate and to understand a higher system of reference. And actually, you begin to see that the way of divine science, through its systematically cultivating each one's consciousness, that actually each one gets on a divine intellectual capacity. Each one becomes very intellectual through the study of science. And one, because one begins to grasp the power of spiritual understanding. So in the long run, one does become intellectual in the sense that one has this power of spiritual understanding. So in that argument that Christian Science or the science of Christian Science is too intellectual, one can say one cannot have enough spiritual understanding. Now, another argument, and these arguments we must know because they may be within ourselves and they may be said to us. Another argument is that science is not necessary since God reveals himself directly to each one of us. And this is what people will say, we don't need a science because God reveals himself directly to each one of us, they'll say. And we'll say, yes, this is true. It is true. In reality, there is only the one mind. Therefore, in reality, we are in constant tune with that one mind, and we are really in constant tune with direct revelation. But we begin to think, how many of us wake up in the morning and say, I don't understand. I don't understand what's going on. What's going on? I don't understand. The whole world, what's happening to it, I don't understand. I mean, you know, most people go into the world saying, I just don't understand. Very few people have this natural, divine awareness that Jesus had. How many people can we say we know that is a Jesus who has this beautiful, natural, divine awareness who each day can just, you know, go through the world and have all this experience happen and comprehend what is happening and understand? Very few people are these natural, divine scientists. Therefore, it's the method of science that we need in order to cultivate our consciousness so that we become in tune with reality so we have this natural awareness. Then we could say, yes, the way is through science and past science. And this is what one of the natural philosophers has said. He said that science is actually a method and that the path is through science but past science, when one actually becomes in tune with reality and can just be the subject. And this is as we saw in the subject of art, where I mentioned the way was through science to learn those fundamental principles of art, but it went, you go through past science to the point where you are those principles and you are freely being it. Now, it's interesting to note that Mary Baker Eddy never says God reveals. She never says God reveals. She only says science reveals. Now, from this, we must draw the conclusion that God reveals through his science. Now, it's actually through science reveals and interprets God to us. We can say it that way. Science reveals, meaning science reveals and interprets God to us. It takes that whole question of the one being and shows it forth in its basic constituents, revealing God to us according to his laws, according to the orders, rules, and system which are inherent in reality. Therefore, we can say in another way that the principle of being is revealed through science. And as we know, every subject is revealed through its science today. It is learned through its science. Now, arguments from the church organization. This is something that is very fundamental and it must be discussed and understood. We must know, and for those who are new here tonight or are new to the subject of Christian Science or the science of Christian Science, which we are talking about here, we must know that not all Christian scientists have been able to grasp the science of what Mrs. Eddy has presented in Science and Health. And actually, it's the whole tendency of the Christian Science field and of the Christian scientists to study Christian Science as a religion and not as a science. Now, Mrs. Eddy saw the danger that the students of Christian Science would be inclined to receive Christian Science through religious belief rather than through scientific understanding, and she dictated an article to her secretary, Dickey, in 1910, and this article is entitled Principle and Practice, which I quoted just a little while ago. And in this she states, some students of Christian Science have accepted, through faith, a divine principle, God, as their Savior, but they have not understood this principle. And again, Mrs. Eddy says, the divine principle cannot be practically demonstrated unless its science be accurately stated. So we see here that Mrs. Eddy herself put big emphasis before she left in 1910 on the fact that there was a danger that the Christian Science field would take the science she presented to the world as a religion, that they would take this science in the realm of pure faith, faith in a divine principle. She saw this danger, and she dictated this article to on principle and practice to Adam Dickey before she left. And it's a very good article, and I recommend reading it in its entirety if you're interested in seeing this particular phase. Now, I'd like to bring up the question of a man named John Dorley. Now, this man may be very new to some of you here tonight. Now, in the earlier and middle part of this century, a student of Christian Science named John Dorley began to grasp the pure science of Christian Science as presented in Science and Health. Now, John Dorley was from England. And I feel that it is necessary to go through briefly his history so you actually know who he is and actually where many of us stand today, the platform we stand on as far as the pure science of Christian Science is concerned. John Dorley, in 1902, and I'll just briefly in an outline way go through this, his history here. In 1902, he became interested in Christian Science. In 1904, he joined the Mother Church. In 1907, he was accepted in the Journal of the Christian Science Journal as a practitioner. In 1910, he was appointed as a Christian Science teacher. In 1914, he was appointed to the lecture board. In 1918, he was appointed president of the Mother Church, and he was actually the second Englishman ever to hold this position. It was in 1926 that he was asked by the Christian Science Board of Directors to allow his name to be considered as first reader of the Mother Church. And this was actually the first non-American considered for this position. Dorley actually declined this honor because at the time he felt that his work was in England. In 1929, he became very convinced that he could best serve Christian Science by giving his exclusive time to a deeper study of the Bible and to Mary Baker Eddy's writings. And it was at this time he felt that this exhaustive study of the Bible and of science and health would actually lead a way to better healing. And he felt that if through the deeper study of Christian Science, that there would be better healing and better demonstrating going on within the field, that then the world would take more notice of the all importance of Christian Science. So at this time, in around 1929, he also began to feel that from his travels as a Christian Scientist all over the world, he began to be convinced that there were signs of danger in the Christian Science field. And this was because he saw there was an increasing tendency of the Christian Scientists to substitute religious beliefs and sentiments for the exact spiritual understanding of science. So it is on this basic premise that Dorley returned to England with the fixed purpose of giving his entire time to the study of the Bible and to Mrs. Eddy's writing, and also, he says, to do better healing. Therefore, we can see the main accent on John Dorley was that he saw that Christian Scientists could never demonstrate Christian Science until they first understood intelligently and scientifically their subject. Now, John Dorley began his deeper study of the science of Christian Science, and out of this study came the whole beginnings of the new understanding into the pure science of Christian Science, which Mrs. Eddy presented in Science and Health. Now, when Dorley was, you know, as one is when one makes a new discovery and begins to see a subject in its newer, in a higher light, in a newer way, they're excited. And when he presented his new scientific findings to the Christian Science field and to the Christian Science Board of Directors, he just ran up against something. Because here he saw that the whole Christian Science movement was going to, by hook or crook, you could say, hold on to Christian Science as a religion and not as a science. And so, therefore, his new scientific findings were not understood, and he was subsequently excommunicated from the whole Christian Science organization. Now, time does not permit me to actually go into a thorough account of Dorley's excommunication from the church, but you can all read it in a pamphlet that he's put out entitled A Statement by John Dorley. And it's in this pamphlet, and it's written very simply and beautifully. This pamphlet actually epitomizes John Dorley's whole platform. And it also, in this pamphlet, includes certain extracts from correspondence between the Christian Science Board of Directors and John Dorley just before his excommunication. Now, through this deep study of the Bible and science and health, Dorley began to see the pure science which Mrs. Eddy presented. He saw that the whole basis and foundation of Mrs. Eddy's teaching on Christian Science was contained in the answer to the question, "What is God?" And as we have seen, that Mrs. Eddy answers this question that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And it was upon this definition he saw laid the whole basis and foundation for Mrs. Eddy's teaching. And he also saw that Mary Baker Eddy defined God in the same sevenfold way as the biblical writers defined God through the 7 days of creation, thus presenting the sevenfold nature of God. He thus showed that Mary Baker Eddy and the biblical writers defined God in exactly the same way, using exactly the same scientific methods. And this must have been, now we take it for granted, but I imagine when one makes this discovery and they see that actually Mrs. Eddy's sevenfold definition of God correlates with the 7 days of creation, one just, I'm sure, becomes just, well, I can just imagine the happy feeling that one would have in the realization of the magnitude of their discovery. Well, what Dorley showed simply is he showed, therefore, that the first day of creation, where it says, "Let there be light," actually had the tone of mind or creative intelligence. He showed that the second day, "Let there be a firmament," had the tone of spirit or separation. He showed that the third day, "Let the waters be gathered unto one place and let the dry land appear," had the tone of soul or identity. The fourth day, which says, "Let there be lights in the firmament," and there was also the creation of the sun, the moon, and the stars, Dorley showed that this actually had the tone of principle or systematic government. On the fifth day, where it states, "Let the waters bring forth moving creatures," Dorley showed that this had the tone of life, or abundant life. And on the sixth day, where the Bible says, "Let us make man in our image and likeness, and let them have dominion," Dorley showed that this was a tone of truth, which is dominion. And in the seventh day, where in the Bible it says, "And on the seventh day God ended his work and rested," Dorley showed that this correlates to the tone of love or perfect fulfillment. In this way, Dorley showed that the Bible correlated in its sevenfold definition, correlates to the sevenfold definition of Mrs. Eddy, and they therefore use the same scientific method of analysis. Now, Dorley also went on to show that this sequence of the 7 days of creation and the sequence of the 7 synonymous terms, as given in the definition of God by Mrs. Eddy, followed a definite and exact mathematical order, and that this was a definite, exact order of spiritual unfoldment, that those 7 days of creation had to be in those order. You couldn't at first say God rested, and then in the fourth day create the sun and the moon, and then maybe have the next thing, a firmament being happening. He saw that all the order of those 7 days of creation couldn't be jumbled up and thrown in any way. He saw that they had to be in that order, that that was an order of unfoldment, a definite order of unfoldment. And therefore, the synonymous terms also followed the same definite order of unfoldment. Mind with the tone of creation, spirit with the tone of birth, bringing forth that creation, soul with a tone of identifying that creation, principle with a tone of governing that creation, life with a tone of moving and multiplying that creation, truth with a tone of giving that creation dominion, and love with a tone of bringing rest and fulfillment to that creation. That the tone of mind was a creative act, and which would go through the seven synonymous terms to the point of love fulfillment. That was a definite order of unfoldment. It was a different order of creation, and that the Bible followed that same definite order of creation, and that they were logical, ordered sequence. Now, Dorley also showed something else that was very profound. He also saw that this same, as in the 7 days of creation, the same sevenfold nature was also presented in the seven major statements of the commandments. He saw that the seven major statements of the commandments also followed the same ordered of unfoldment. He saw that the seven beatitudes also followed the same order of unfoldment, of course bringing out different teachings. They weren't bringing out the same thing. The Beatitudes were teaching something different than the commandments, which is a whole study in itself if we had to go into this. But he saw that they followed that same order of unfoldment in order to bring forth their subject. He saw that the seven statements of the Lord's Prayer, in order to bring forth the Lord's Prayer, it also went through these seven orders of unfoldment. In fact, he began to see that the whole Bible, seen in its structure, follows a 7,000-year period. And this, if one had to go back into biblical history, the Old Testament writers believed that it would take 1,000 years in order to live one day. I believe they say one day is as 1,000 years, meaning that it would take 1,000-year periods in order for those 7 days of creation to be realized by mankind. Therefore, the Bible in its whole structure follows a 7,000-year period unfoldment. Here we see that Dorley saw that the basis and foundation then of Mrs. Eddy's teachings on Christian Science was contained, therefore, within that question, what is God? Now, this is exciting. It is still exciting to us today, this discovery. But as I said, when he presented it to the Christian Science field and to the Christian Science Board of directors, because of their ignorant hold onto a religious interpretation of Christian Science, they misunderstood Dorley's teachings, and he was excommunicated mainly on the basis that they felt he was interjecting his own personal view into the writings of Mary Baker Eddy and the Bible. Now, it's good. One can say, now, how do we know who's right? Is the church right? Are the Christian Science Board of Directors, were they right, or is Dorley right? And I think one should only turn to Mrs. Eddy in a time of decision to know, to make decisions, and you can see how she handles this question concerning Dorley and the church. About the 7 days of creation, Mrs. Eddy states in Miscellaneous Writings on page 57, she states, in its genesis, the science of creation is stated in mathematical order, beginning with the lowest form and ascending the scale of being up to man. Now here Mrs. Eddy shows, as Dorley discovered, that the first record of creation thus gives a mathematical order of spiritual unfoldment. Now, what about the seven synonymous terms and Dorley's emphasis on the fact that these seven synonymous terms were the basis of Mrs. Eddy's science? Now, Mrs. Eddy states in her 1880 class, she says, upon the truth of these terms, and she was discussing the seven synonymous terms, she says, upon the truth of these terms for God rests the basis of the science. In fact, they are the science. Now, one just knows through understanding that all the arguments that come from the church are really based on ignorance and on a religious interpretation of Christian Science. Now, I'd like to just go through a few of these arguments some more, because it's important to know what the church is saying concerning our study of Christian Science. Now, they'll say, in an argument they'll say, is that there is no definite order to the seven synonymous terms. And they say, okay, there is no definite order to the seven synonymous terms, because in science and health, they say, we find many different arrangements to the seven synonymous terms. Now, I've written them here. they have said, like on page 465, the first category up here, on page 465, they say, now, look at, Mrs. Eddy says that she gives the order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And then again, on page 115, she gives the order of principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind. And then the church says, and then again on page 587, she gives the order of principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love. Now, they say, how can the students of Dorley in Dorley say that there's an order to the seven synonymous terms when she has all these arrangements? There can't be an order. Now, the whole answer to this question is very, very simple. Order is infinite. And it is the purpose which determines the order. Now, on page 465, the purpose of that order is to define what God is. The purpose is to define how God declares himself. So therefore, we see that God always declares himself in a sevenfold way of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. That's the order of declaration, the order of creation. And this is illustrated, as we showed, through the seven days of creation. This is the Word of God, the self-declaration order of God. Now, on page 115, we have another purpose to this order. The purpose on page 115 is to state the scientific translation of immortal mind. And it's in the scientific translation of immortal mind that Mrs. Eddy states the order of principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind. Now, the whole purpose of this order is not to define what God is. The purpose of this order is to show the Christ. The purpose of this order is to show the translating office of the Christ and how principle, starting with principle, translates itself to the point of idea, mind. So the whole purpose of that order is something entirely different than the purpose of the word order. Therefore, it must be in this order. It's a translating order. Now, on page 587 in the glossary, we find the order of principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love. And this has the purpose of characterizing the office of Christianity, or the purpose of showing for true reflection. Now, just because many of us are new to the subject, I don't want to go into it. It's a little ahead of ourselves now. But I just want to show that there are arguments coming forth about our study of science, and that is one from the church, that these synonymous terms do not follow a definite order. But we know that order is infinite, and that those synonymous terms show forth a different order, yet they're still in order, but they show forth a different order when they have a different purpose to do.